Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and back with us now is Reshma Saujani, founder of Girls Who Code. Maybe you know her from that. Former New York City deputy public advocate under Bill de Blasio. Maybe you know her from that. And recently a candidate for the Democratic public advocate nomination, which of course she didn't win, but maybe you know her from that. Reshma Saujani now has a book, Women Who Don't Wait in Line. And much as society has been encouraging women to succeed in school and the workplace, Saujani writes that the gender gap is as striking as ever. Only 14% of Fortune 500 executives and only 4% of CEOs are women. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. So your advice, as the subtitle to the book suggests, Break the Mold, Lead the Way?
Yes. You know, the book is like part memoir, part wake-up call. We need a new playbook. Like, women in leadership, we're stagnating right now. But women are the majority of our workforce, the majority in college, the majority in the ballot box. And we need to offer a new platform of advice to get women to rise up the leadership ranks. And that's what this book does.
Usually after an unsuccessful campaign, politicians say they want to take some time off to spend with their family. You're obviously immediately on to the next project.
I am, though I am taking that honeymoon that we haven't taken yet. Listen, this race, too, was a big wake-up call for me in terms of gender, in terms of the work that we need to do. I woke up the next morning and I was devastated, and I read my book to help pick me up. Because
three of the four candidates were women, and a woman won.
And I was so happy to have endorsed her and support her, and that's part of what I'm talking about, is the importance of the sisterhood. Just because I fail doesn't mean that we shouldn't have more women who run for office and who try to succeed.
Do you wish the book had come out during the campaign? Could it have made a difference?
No, I intentionally wanted the book to come out afterwards because I wanted to make sure that I had enough time to really be out here on radio shows like with you, Brian, really talking about what some of the lessons are that I learned.
So one piece of advice, write a personal mission statement and have a board of directors that helps advise and keep you accountable for your goals. Do you mean that literally, like an individual has a board of directors?
I literally mean that. Yes, I think that you have to write a mission statement. I mean, so much of the reason why I think women either exit the workforce or stagnate is because we forget what our dharma is. You know, what is it that you are waking up in the morning and bounding out of bed to do? And then you need to write a plan to really hold yourself accountable. And you need people in your life who are going to sponsor you and mentor you. You know, it's funny. I saw this in my own race, right, with Daniel Squadron. He had Chuck Schumer there who endorsed him, who helped him, who called in that support, who guided him along the process, who validated him. And if we're going to crash through the ceiling, whether it's in politics or in corporate boardrooms, we need our own fairy godmothers, right, who are going to stand up and validate and advocate for us and lift us up that ladder.
You use the word mentor, and I see that you write about the difference between a mentor and a sponsor. And I guess traditionally a mentor is someone who gives you advice, someone you can have coffee with and glean information from. But you say what women really need are sponsors. What's the difference?
Sponsors are the person who's going to appear on that television commercial with you and say, vote for her. Sponsors are the ones who are going to actually call in a colleague and say, you need to hire her. Sponsors are someone who are going to put their reputations online and to take a risk in order to elevate you.
And you think that's been harder for women?
Absolutely. I think that that's been hard. I think that's been harder for me. You know, I have very few sponsors in my life when I decided I wanted to run or when I was starting Girls Who Code who would really show me the way. And what's really fascinating now is the power of horizontal networks. You know, when I look for advice, I look for advice to women who are in my own generation who are kind of figuring it out. You know, the world has changed, Brian. In the 1970s, 18% of women worked and had children. That number is now 86%. But many of the structures haven't change to make it possible for women to do that. So we're trying to figure it out on our own, and we're leaning on each other to do that.
My guest is Reshma Saujani, whose new book is Women Who Don't Wait in Line, Break the Mold, Lead the Way. Listeners, we have a few minutes for calls with Reshma Saujani, and I wonder if we can take calls specifically from women who consider yourself successful in whatever field you're in, since this book is full of so much specific advice. Call us and maybe talk about the best piece of advice you got about being a woman who didn't wait in line, as the book title suggests. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or you can ask Reshma a question. at 212-433-WNYC, or you can post your question or comment online at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. Another piece of advice, after you fail at something, throw a failure party. And you're serious.
I'm totally serious. I go to a lot of panels where I see these women who talk about everything that went right, how they succeeded. And sometimes it made me feel bad about myself and say, you know, what am I not doing right to always succeed? We have to share our stories of failure, show how we took the car off the road and got back on it. So much of, I think, the difference between men and women is that men are able to really embrace risk. You think about this, the guy who walks down the street and makes the cat call at the woman and gets rejected. He just goes ahead and does it again. He's been taught to accept rejection. We need to do the same thing.
There's all kinds of data out there about men being less risk averse than women. They make, you know, more risky financial investments. And it's not always a good thing.
It's not always a good thing.
So there's a balancing on that continuum, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I'm not telling them to go out there and make really risky financial investments, but what I'm telling them to do is to stop worrying about getting so many notches on your belt and apply for that job you're not qualified for. Take those double jumps in your career. You know, try to get on a board that you thought you could never get on. You know, take risks in your career and really embrace failure, because I do believe that if you haven't failed enough, you haven't done enough, and it makes you stronger. And yes, I say this as the woman who has lost two races, who's dealt with and applied to Yale Law School three times before I got in. My life has been a lot of failure. But I think that, you know, in this race, for example, you know, just because I fail doesn't mean someone out there is not going to try and potentially create that type of innovation. So there's not just one path to politics or one path into the corporate boardroom.
Your political campaigns have been this one in the New York City Public Advocate primary, and previously you ran a primary against Congresswoman Carolyn Maloney, which she won. So did you throw yourself failure parties after either of these?
You know, I did. I went out there, and when I talked on panels about the lessons I learned, I talked about my failures. My book is a failure party. You know, I open up from a very emotional place of how I felt. I was crushed. My confidence was just stomped on, and I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know what my path was. Part of how I got out of that rut was talking about the lessons I learned. I mean, and I talk about this at the end of my book, I learned to be an authentic leader. I learned to embrace who I am. I learned to dress like me. I learned to talk like me. In my first race, I put my hair in a ponytail and wore a boxy suit and tried to memorize a speech and went on YouTube like crazy trying to find that perfect woman who I wanted to sound like. In this race, I didn't go on defense in the morning when I got up and got ready. I, you know, crumpled up that written speech and just talked. I connected. And I think that authenticity is something that we as women need to embrace, because it's about connection.
Were there specific female politicians from the past who you were modeling yourself after in that first race?
You know, Hillary Clinton's always been a role model for me. She is somebody who has really helped me in my career, and I think she is an example of not only a woman who doesn't wait in line, but someone who really embraces the sisterhood, who takes her leadership seriously and feels like she has an obligation to other women to give them leadership opportunities. You see that in her State Department. There's so many women who've come out of that State Department with leadership positions and are now changing the conversation about women and girls.
Rupa in New Providence. You're on WNYC with Reshma Sarjani. Hi.
Thank you so much for taking my call. I love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling because the story really resonates with me. I left a nearly 18-year career in the corporate world to launch my own business less than a year ago. And it's so much of navigating not just a man's world, but also standing up for myself, standing up for what I need to do to move forward, to make my business successful, being assertive, being strong. So the message really resonates, but the biggest thing I've learned is from other business women. I joined a group called BIG, which is Believe, Inspire, Grow, which is a women's group for women. And I get such amazing camaraderie and sisterhood mentorship through the group, women who have learned and are supportive of other women. And I find it just tremendously valuable.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, that's what I talk about in terms of the sisterhood. You know, 20 million women now have the power to make hiring decisions. Like, we have to build our own girls club. And really, you know, like, if we are the lean-in generation, we have to lean into each other. And I can't agree with you more, Rupa, about how these sisterhoods have been so helpful to me in my career.
Because the biggest thing also for me was I have children, and that's why I left the corporate world. I mean, don't get me wrong. As a small business owner, I work harder than I ever have before, but it's on my terms. It's who I am. It's what I want to do. And nobody understands those challenges of being a mother and being a businesswoman than other business owners who are also women. And so I found incredible strength in that.
Yeah.
Thank you for your call. And Darlene in Chestnut Ridge, you're on WNYC. Hi.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking the call. I'm calling in regarding that I'm agreeing with what you're saying and your book, and there's this other part of me that doesn't agree. And the part that doesn't agree is I feel that your numbers and statistics are coming from corporate America, which is something that is already established and has been for quite some time, where I feel that the presence of women today in the workforce or the work world is so much the strength now is with an online presence. And I feel, including myself, where being a mother, I'm now in my 50s, but in raising children, I made a decision to be with them and give them what they really need. And now that my youngest is a senior in high school and the other two are off in college, I did a slow, persistent course of study work. And at this point, I am a holistic nutritionist. And so coming to the point of an online presence, I don't feel that we have to go and find a place to become a part of. We can create our own space to be. And in that mode, there are many, many women who are either CEOs or presidents of their own business doing very, very well. And I just wanted to put that point out there that it's not about having to be part of a group already developed.
Reshma, talk to Darlene.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And I do have some of those stories in my book because I think you're right. The difference with this wave of feminism is like we have to take an account of technology. And so many women are kind of defining their own careers by taking advantage of the opportunities to really have that flexibility by building these businesses online. And I think that we have to encourage more of that. You know, what's so interesting is with this millennial generation, flexibility is really important to them. You know, they want to be mothers and have careers at the same time, and they want to do it on their own terms. And so it's even more important for us, I think, as women, as we are supporting these women in their businesses to do that, right? Whether it's through investments, whether it's through tweeting or blogging about the amazing work that these entrepreneurs like you are doing online, we need to build that sisterhood.
And you mentioned Sheryl Sandberg in your book, and it certainly reflects a lot of the thinking that comes up in her book, Lean In, and that model. But one of the criticisms of Lean In is that it really is about super high-level individual achievement. It doesn't necessarily provide larger policy lessons or lessons for women across the economic spectrum. Were you trying not to fall into that trap?
Absolutely. In the last part of the book, I talk about what's your toolkit, right? And we know that there's a study that came out that majority of breadwinners are now single moms making 70 cents on every dollar. Part of what we need to do is make these structural changes on affordable daycare, on paid leave, that are going to help support the majority of women who are barely making it. And I think for those of us that are in positions of which we can walk into our boss's office and are not worried about losing our job because we don't have two children to put, you know, food in their mouths, we need to take action for them.
In the public advocate race, you ran as sort of a tech sector candidate, talking not just about gender, but about your background in the tech community. And I know you had a lot of support from the tech sector, but you came in a distant third to Tish James and Daniel Squadron with 15% of the vote. Does it say anything about the potential clout of Silicon Alley? Is New York's tech community not politically engaged enough or not as powerful and connected as some people think they are?
I think that, look, I guess you could make that same argument with the South Asian community, which was very supportive of me, and younger women or women, you know, below the age of 55. You know, I represent in many ways a new candidate in New York City that isn't part of the establishment, that is trying to bring up new issues. And I think it's just going to take time to break in. My name is Reshma Sajani, Brian. And I remember walking out of the poll booth and this woman said, I said, who'd you vote for? And she said, I voted for the really pretty girl with the foreign name. And I was like, that's me. you know, it's going to take time for new voices to be part of the process. And part of my message to people is you got to keep trying. I can't give up.
So what's next for Reshma Saujani? And as a former deputy public advocate under Bill de Blasio, might there be a role for you in the administration?
I am very excited about my work with Girls Who Code and going to be spending time doing that full time. You know, I really believe that we are seeing the gender divide in technology like ever before, and we have an opportunity to really change that. And so pushing computer science education, making it mandatory, and working with Mayor de Blasio to make sure that we have a real conversation about technology and education in our city, as well as doing the thing I just talked about, which is, you know, we have a large rising South Asian political base, and making sure that we really cultivate that base and have more people vote and participate in the process.
Reshma Saujani's new book is called Women Who Don't Wait in Line, Break the Mold, Lead the Way. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Jacques Steinberg, college admissions expert and advocate. He wrote the book, The Gatekeepers, Inside the Admissions Process of a Premier College. We're going to start a series with Jacques Steinberg on college admissions, and he'll take your calls. And we begin today with part one, Who Should Apply for Early Admission? Stay with us.